Avagyanati mirandhasya gyanan jana sarakaya akshuranmalitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Namo om Vishnu padaya Krishna prasthaya bhutale Srimate bhakti vedanta swaminiti namine. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunavade Pashyata Desha Tarine Ashri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasari Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare जय गुरु महाराज से प्रभुपाद की वेरी इंपॉर्टेंट कंसेप्शंस अबाउट अंडरस्टैंडिंग व्हाट लाइफ इज सो साइंस मॉडर्न साइंस डजंट हैव मस्ट नॉट हैव मच डिस्कशन ऑन दिस इंपॉर्टेंट टॉपिक्स एट फेट एज वेल एज दिस फ्रीडम ऑफ फ्री विल. So before I took up just a little bit about, this is about free will, that Krishna, what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. But before that, I just speak a few words on what is the nature of fate. There is a strong tendency among the people who are trained in science and technology, to dismiss this called a conception called fate. It is a blind fate. But actually, fate is also a very important element in science, in modern science. So somehow they have not taken it very seriously, but sometimes they use it all the time in our modern scientific research work. That is a very important principle. So which is actually common to both scientific research as well as a religious work. Because I said, a religious person said we have faith in God, in the Supreme Being. But a scientist will say, well, we have faith in our reason, in our rational, let's say, analysis of events that are taking place. So therefore they try to dismiss that the religious faith or religious this principle. But at the same time, both the scientists as well as the religious people actually use this this principle called fate. It's like just a simple example. Suppose I come from India, from Calcutta to, let's say, Switzerland, fly to Geneva, and so then I buy a ticket, and then I make all the arrangements so that I can at least take the plane. But now in taking that aeroplane or in flying to that, go to the airport and then I'll board the plane. But that in that, I have already put my faith that the pilots and so the aeroplane itself is going to be, everything is going to be all right, and then so I'll board a plane and then I'll reach my destination. So that fate is, it comes like automatically, that we don't even question whether that pilot will be alright, whether the plane will be hijacked, so that we are not so much worrying about it. But there is an element of fate that at least I'll be alright. I'll reach, I have to take this flight, because if I miss this flight then I won't reach in time. But the choice is that making the choice whether I should fly or I should not fly I think that depends on the individual. And just like in this, that aeroplane that took from Boston to, that was hijacked by these terrorists. So in the newspaper I saw that there was one passenger who was supposed to be in that plane in Boston. But he did not take that flight. So, but we saw his picture in the newspaper, at least I saw, that he was almost with tears, crying that he would have been dead. But somehow, by some inconceivable arrangement, he did not take the flight, and so he was saved. So that, in other words, choice, that free will, and so the fate, they go side by side together. So in other words, that my journey to Switzerland, that if I did not take the flight, then definitely I will not know whether my fate, that the aeroplane was all right, and I will reach in that my destination. So that cannot be analyzed if I didn't take the flight. But when I took the flight, and I had before I had a confidence that I had a faith that I will reach my destination, and some friends of mine or some devotees are going to receive me in the airport. And so I'll be all right. But then, when you arrive in my case, I arrived in Geneva. So then, my friends were waiting for me. So when I arrived there, then, so it was confirmed that, so this was not blind faith. But unless you do that experiment, unless you board the airplane, then you won't know whether your faith is alright or not. So therefore, but, as soon as you do this some kind of experiment, that you do it, you take that experiment, and when you get the result that you thought, then is it called blind faith, or what type of faith that you have? So that's the type of question that one wants to contemplate. In other words, faith is a very essential element of quality of life. That it cannot be taken as very lightly. Same thing happened in science. That suppose I want to go to the laboratory, conduct an experiment. Generally we planned out, many possible experiments that to achieve a certain result. Say, for example, if you're a chemist or if you're an engineer, and you make certain plans, and there are several possibilities of conducting, verifying or some type of theoretical, conception. But then you make several plans, and among those plans, then you map out these plans, and then I select, one plan that I have confidence, that I have most faith. Yes, if I do this experiment, then I'll be able to, that we all do like that in the laboratory. And say, for example, if you're chemistry, if you make some compounds in the laboratory, then you choose many possibilities out of that, and then you order the chemicals that you want to try out, and this is a trial and error. Sometimes we do that. But at least we select that process which you have most confidence, or you have strong faith. Yes, if I do this, then I will achieve this. So this is the same as we have regular normal faith in science. So this is always, it goes on all the time. In other words, science also, you could say blind faith that they have, we have. And similarly, but somehow this point has not been very seriously thought about by the scientists. They are only thinking about the religious from the religious conception that day. Similarly, our Prabhupada used to say that to the proof that who is your father. So the words of the mother, the genuine mother, she will never lie to the son, and she will say, "Yes, my dear son." And such and such is your father. So that's the genuine son, and he doesn't question any longer. But if the son says, well, I want to do a DNA test, you know, like today, it is a DNA, you can do a DNA test, whether this was my father or not. But will the son do that? So that means, so if the son is not confident about the mother's words, then of course he has the right to, you know, if he wants to, if it is possible. But generally, the finer qualities of life, the nobility or the inner qualities of life, prescribe that this should be accepted. So therefore, it saves a lot of time and energy and unnecessary thought that in the mind. If the element of faith is understood properly, so such things are not there in the mechanistic conception of life. In other words, when one conceives that life is a product of matter, or like life is a product of just a combination of certain extraordinary molecules, and then such, so what is that, the element or the chemistry that gives this type of understanding? So this is a very intricate problem, both in science as well as in philosophy. So therefore, what I was just trying to say is that there are realms, there are areas where science cannot give the answer. But the same is real. This is real. It's called, reality beyond rationality. So that has to be accepted. So this is one property that in understanding life, trying to understand life, so this is an important principle. And the second quality, which is again, very important, is the freedom, the free will. The freedom, so we have a right to either use my free will in the right way or in the wrong way. So that principle is also there as a property of life, the quality of life, especially in the human form of life. So this free will is also not discussed much in science, although there is some vague conception in science that free will, let's say in modern science, doesn't accept about the existence of free will. But every scientist thinks that he or she has some free will. That's another area that supports this life comes from life. It can be said it is a scientific as well as a philosophical doctrine that life comes from life. So these are some of the elements that we talk about supporting this theological paradigm or the model of studying life. So in that, this connection of free will, so this is sloka, maybe we can read this sloka. Any question on that fate? What is the name?
Well, millions and millions of years ago, when this universe came into being, according to the scientists, it was all just a part of the Mother Earth, was a part of the Sun. Everything was just a molten mass. Turned into different elements. So how it started, how the plants and the human beings and the animals, because they are finding
Well, that's another area that people speculate that according to scientific cosmology, let's say the universe is only about 15 billion years old, and the creation or this manifestation of Earth planet, and so these things are according to the Big Bang conception. But this is actually just the conception, this is the idea. And there's no proof. Still, although scientists are trying to justify by certain, let's say they say the proof, but actually there's no proof so far. It is a conception that well, you have to work something on certain conception, certain idea about discussing about origins. But then the Vedic culture has its own conception, its own principle of how this universe was created. I think this is another area that needs to be to investigate. I think both from the scientific point of view as well as the theological conception. There is no settlement. This is just the conception. And equally that if one actually works very closely with the Vedic process of creation, I think there's a lot to be said. I think there's plenty of room that scientists also cannot reject. Even when Carl Sagan, when he came to India, as to in his that Cosmos that television series, he took a lot of ideas from India. he was supposed to be very artistic, but finally he had something to say. And recently there is an article by this Dyson, Freeman Dyson, this well-known cosmologist from Princeton University. In fact, we are I'll be releasing one book soon, sometime next month. It is there in this book. About so he said, don't think that this Big Bang theory is right. Don't think that the DNA or this mapping of human genomes has understood of life. And he's quite a very prominent scientist today in the world. And so in this way, there are many, many questions about the about this, even the very conception of Big Bang, but generally the thoughtful people accept that this is not the answer to the question of origin. But it is, it's a working model, because you have to start something, some conception, just an idea that it might be like this. So it is a conception. So based on that, they build their knowledge about life in the universe. And so it's, therefore this area that about the nature of life and also about the nature of universe, especially in Krishna consciousness, has become very central also, central theme for us. What is life? Because say you do the practice bhakti yoga, and in order to practice bhakti yoga, you have to understand what is life. What are the qualities of life? What is the symptom of life? What is the goal of life? So otherwise, why do you practice bhakti yoga? First of all, the question comes is that what is life? I think this is very important. So this would be many, many years of discussion on the topic, but I think this. It is better to agree that yes, we do not have the complete knowledge or the knowledge to understand this this stage of our development of civilization. That and then what to do about it? What the way they said we shall we fight each other? Because since we don't know on a topic, should we fight each other or shall we come to some reasonable the agreement. I think that is the important principle, having dialogue between the science and the science and the religion. And our Krishna consciousness and practical application of Krishna consciousness actually focuses on that. That That was Prabhupada's main worry about this life, about modern scientists, is that they are saying too much, having little knowledge. We have very little knowledge, but we extrapolate too much. In other words, they overdo it. So, in other words, the scientists are not humble enough. They say too much, but with very little knowledge. I think that is the... but there are scientists who admit that, yes, actually many of the brilliant scientists who are... but most of them, actually, just a few who are not so as thorough in their judgment of knowledge, these are the ones who make big noise. And actually, in history it's like that. They're very, not very, very big scientists, but some scientists who try to make big noise, but they are not the ones who actually have the knowledge. It is like that. Even in a, like people like Einstein, although they are not really trained as devotees, but in their own way, they at least had this acknowledgement that there is something much higher than what we can grasp. So he called it cosmic religion, that Einstein's religion, cosmic religion. And so all this this well-known, very important scientist in the history of science, all the important scientists have this conception of some kind of a god that at least they admit that there is definitely something much superior than we can grasp, we can conceive. And that invariably is accepted by very brilliant scientists. Just very few, like in modern time, there is a scientist called Crick. He was one of the scientists who shared Nobel Prize in discovering the DNA structure in 1953. He's from England. He himself says he's an atheist, but otherwise, most of the scientists, important scientists, they accept about the existence of God. But the small scientists, they have big noise. They make big noise. Unfortunately, in the media and others, these words are broadcast in a much more wider scale. So therefore, the whole world is kind of dominated by these words. That's what I think the tendency is. In the historically, it's like that. So therefore. It is much more appropriate or much more timely to try to present these, especially these conclusions that are described in the form of teachings of Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam in these areas. So that was our Prabhupada's main emphasis on presenting Krishna consciousness among the educated people, like the scientists and the scholars in general. So this knowledge has to be presented. About these fossils and others, that's another, there are... Actually, there are many interesting theories conception that Prabhupada gave about the dinosaurs. Prabhupada spoke about a lot about these Saitatriyata Dwapur Kali, because the Saitatriyata Dwapur Kali, these four yuga cycles, they rotate, and according to our Vedic cosmology, and this rotate. So the extinction of dinosaurs, that Prabhupada was explaining that in some other, let's say, yuga, so that remnants might have, it is possible that something could be visible, in the previous millennia, in the previous yuga cycles, and so these are. Because Prabhupada gave a lot of hints about how to go a little bit further along these lines, and so it is possible that by deeply involving some of these works, you could probably find more evidence about explaining. But at some time, you know, the process of creation of living entities in this universe, in this world, according to the Vedic conception, the creation takes place simultaneously. So it's not that one living being, you know, they say, for example, just like a Darwinian model evolution that comes from the, let's say, lower forms of life to the higher forms of life. It's not like, but it was created simultaneously. The creation takes place from Mahavishnu, according to the Vedic cosmology. And Mahavishnu is nothing but an expansion of is a Purusha avatar of the Supreme Godhead. So this Mahavishnu, then Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and Shirodakshay Vishnu, so these are the called Purusha avatars, is coming from Krishna. And this is Mahavishnu, and these three Purusha avatars are only in this, for the creation of this material world. And according to that nature of that particular yuga cycle, that when the creation begins, many factors like karma, the karmas of the individuals who are going to appear, and many other factors, so sometimes all the living entities don't manifest. Certain living entities manifest according to that yuga cycle. And so during that manifestation, those who are able to exercise life in order to be free from these cycles of birth and death, in other words, those who are free from this material entanglement by the practice of devotional service, then those are the ones who is going to be going out of this the universe, this material universe, and go to the spiritual world, back to home, or what calls back to Godhead. But those who do not have the facility, that again they will be at the time of winding up in the Brahma's the end of Brahma's life. So when the whole world again winds up, that everything goes back to Mahavishnu's body. So Mahavishnu's body, so they stay there dormant until the next manifestation creation takes place. So the cycles of creation and the destruction is in the form of Mahapralaya, so that goes on continuously, according to the Vedic. I think there is a lot of, I think, many important ideas there. So in other words, creation, you know, takes place simultaneously as Mahavishnu's glance over this material nature. And material nature, according to Vedic conception, said there is the primordial matter, it's called undifferentiated matter, that is called pradhan. Pradhan is the sum total of all the material elements. So that is according to the Sangha philosophy, that is And Prabhupada explains very elaborately in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in different commentaries that Prabhupada makes. That so that is called Mahatattva. Mahatattva is a partial manifestation of that Pradhan. But these are all the material nature. So in that Mahatattva, we have three gunas. That Satta, Rajatama, these three gunas. And from these three gunas, we have all these, in chemistry, what you call elements, like all these carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sodium, potassium, all these elements are coming from these three modes of nature. Satta, Rajatama, these gunas. So this Mahatattva, and from that, even it's called in the Sankhya philosophy, it's called 24, Chaturvimshati, this element, 24 elements, called elements. So in 24 elements, then we have five gross elements, and then three subtle elements. So these subtle elements are intelligence, and Ahankar is false ego, and the unmanifested called three modes of material nature, Satta, Rajas, Tamas, the three gunas. So this is the unmanifested form. So those are three elements, so that makes eight. Then plus, we have five these senses for acquiring knowledge. That eyes, that nose, and the ears, and tongue and skin. So these are called five gross elements. So this is called senses for acquiring knowledge. So these are for knowledge acquiring. And then there is a then there are five working senses. So five working senses are, this is regarded one sense for working the hands, then the legs, you know, hands do things by hand, the legs by, you know, using the legs, going here and there, works. And then we have the evacuating, like the part, then the generating part, so these are the four, plus the voice, that using the voice. So these are five, these are called working senses. So that means five gross senses, there's senses for acquiring knowledge, and five working senses that become ten. And then you have the mind there. The mind is regarded as the internal sense or the king of senses. So along with the mind, so the mind is regarded as the element sense. Also is regarded as the king of all the senses. So then plus, we have five objects of senses. So that makes all this make 24. It's called 24. This is called what in the Sankhya philosophy called Chaturvimshati, 24 elements. So these 24 elements, they all come from this Mahatattva. But this is how the Sankhya philosophy describes. It's called the fundamental principles of material nature. And over to that, actually, according to the different scholars, then calculation of the number of the elements are varying. But I think in our case, 24 is the kind of commonly accepted by all. But on that, over and above that, you add two elements. So that is, one is called time. You add time, so that makes 25, and then time that plus add the Atma, Jivatma, that makes 26. So these 26 elements, these 26 regarded as the fundamental principles of this creation. So these informations are not available to the scientists. But these are very elaborate, but this forms the foundation of manifested knowledge. And then the interaction between the jivatma, the life, that the individual life, and then these elements, these material elements, the interface, that the mixing, how this mixing takes place. And mixing takes place is a time factor. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kalos me, and the time, that time factor is me, Krishna. So time is the mixing element between this Jivatma and all these material elements. So in this way, the creation takes place. And these informations are not available. So the scientists, what they are doing, they're just conceiving as an idea that when you analyze this body, then you find on this only chemistry that these molecules and that make up this body. So they thought that life is nothing but it's a combination of this chemistry. Therefore, it is very, very incomplete. So this study of this Sankhya philosophy in this Bhagavatam, we study about the science of the self, about the science of life, and Bhagavat says that the three transcendental elements that make up the body of this eternal Jivatma. In other words, Jivatma is life is eternal. That is Sat. Then life is conscious. So it has Chetana. Chetana means Chit. That Chit potency, Chetana. Life has the quality of consciousness. Chetana. Chit Shakti. Chit Shakti means the knowledge of conscious, the living entity is conscious, that's awareness. So in that awareness, everything that comes is the free will, all this conception comes within that. So that conscious symptoms is the transcendental, entity, and plus that the life has the quality to be very joyful. That is ananda aspect, that Satchidananda aspect actually is saying in a different way. So that is three transcendental aspects are the qualities of life, also that make up the transcendental body of the pure soul. So these are very very deep, I think, philosophical as well as the substance. I think it's a very so hopefully this knowledge will become when many devotees sleep around the world, populate this entire planet is populated by the devotees. And this knowledge will become very prominent. Then everyone will become a devotee of Krishna, and then it'll be easier to explain. But at the same time, I'm sure I think scientists also become very interested. These are important aspects especially in the study about the science of life. So free will. The free will is part of that chetana. Chetana means that consciousness, the chit aspect, chit element, that the transcendental element called chit, chit ananda, that chetana or chit, that means the conscious element. So within that is free will and fate and so these things are within that. Within this element, Chaitanya. So therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, iti te jnanam akhyatam, Guhyat Gunyataram Maya, Guhyat Guhyat Taram Maya. Bimri Saita Rase Sena. Bimri Saita Rase Sena. Yathe Sasi Tatha Kuru. Yathe Chasi Tatha Kuru. Iti Te Jnanam Aikhyatam. Guhyat. Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj Prabhupada, thus I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential. Deliberate on this fully and then do what you wish to do. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord has already explained to Arjuna the knowledge of Brahma-bhuta. One who is in the Brahma-bhuta condition is joyful. He never laments, nor does he desire anything. That is due to confidential knowledge. Krishna also discloses knowledge of the Super Soul. This is also Brahman knowledge, knowledge of Brahman, but it is superior. Here the verse, yathe sasi tatha kuru, as you like, you may act, indicate that God does not interfere with the little independence of the living entity. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has explained in all respects how one can elevate his living condition. The best advice imparted to Arjuna is to surrender unto the Super Soul seated within his heart. By right discrimination, one should agree to act according to the order of the Super Soul. That will help one become situated constantly in Krishna consciousness. The highest perfectional stage of human life, Arjuna is being directly ordered by the Personality of Godhead to fight. Surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in the best interest of the living entities. It is not for the interest of the Supreme. Before surrendering, one is free to deliberate on this subject as far as the intelligence goes. That is the best way to accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such instruction comes also through the spiritual master, the bona fide representative of Krishna. So, Arjuna was instructed by Lord Krishna that because of his guna karma, that he was a warrior, he was a kshatriya, so his actual duty was to fight. But then when Arjuna was making this proposal to Lord Krishna that how can I kill my elders, my teachers, my relatives, all my worshipable elders, so that I will be incurring sinful activities, why should I fight? Now I will not fight. So when Lord Krishna heard that, then so Lord Krishna was explaining to Arjuna in the science of the self, in the science of self-realization. So then he was explaining what is the nature of life and then why we get entangled by the modes of material nature and under that illusion that one is thinking that this is my body. And this belongs to me, all the bodily conceptions, that these are my relatives, these are this and that, so all in terms of bodily conception. So God Krishna, the Supreme Lord, was explaining to Arjuna that you are illusion. So then he slowly, by enlightening Arjuna, then Arjuna actually came to his senses. Ultimately he was enlightened, and so he knew what is to be done, what is not to be done. So in the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, therefore, Lord Krishna was again explaining to Arjuna that now I have given you that knowledge, what is right and what is wrong, but now you decide whether you want to fight or not fight. Now it's up to you. So I thought this is very significant, because this definitely says that about the nature of life, the fundamental principle of life, that means life has freedom, free will. I think this has to be accepted as an axiom of life, life's axioms. Just like in science, we work with axioms. So similarly, axiom means you don't need to prove, you have to accept it. So this is what science also accepts. So we have to accept that life has a freedom, free will. So this is the axiom of life, one of the axioms of life. And also Lord Krishna says very clearly here that now you wish, what you wish to do, do it. And so this free will or the freedom, how to act, I think is a very important very, very important for each one of us, for everyone actually. According to how I act, then generally, naturally the result will come. If I act wrongly, definitely I will get the result. Just like I think the other day you are asking me about, in New York, that that collective karma, whether is it God's mercy or I don't. Someone asked, "Is it that?" Yeah. So that was a good question. And but the point is that we have to acknowledge that there is a freedom. We have free will. It's a very fundamental property of life. This free will, and then free will. That how to use that free will, you know, is it a, because I can use it rightly or I can also use it wrongly. It's like, you know, those people who did the hijacking, those suicide pilots, definitely they, it was gross misuse of, their freedom, the free will. If you make further analysis, you can say a lot of things. At the same time, according to the Vedic culture, this suicide actually is a very, very it is a very highly condemned in the Vedic culture. But when one commits suicide, then what happens is that such an individual will have a costly body. That for a long time, as a person who would not be able to recover because of the gross sinful activity, and wandering in this cosmos without being manifested properly. In other words, this degrades the soul to the lowest degree, and so it is regarded as a highly sinful. So therefore, in the Vedic culture, it is regarded as most unfortunate, if something, of course this is another area that we will not talk us about. but the thing is that the misuse of free will one will definitely get the result, that in a very negative way. So therefore the right and the use of freedom, the choice that, or the free will that the individual has, so that has to be definitely guided by Krishna consciousness. Unless one is trained in Krishna consciousness, it is not possible to understand how to use the free will properly. So in other words, this gives a condition that, so therefore, one has to become, especially in this world, when one comes to this world, so one must be a servant of Krishna. One must be a devotee of Lord Krishna. So only then one will be able to use the free will properly. This is the So this is actually, but here Lord Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that now I have given you the knowledge, now you, now is your choice. You like to do this, to fight it, not fight it, but now it's up to you. But then when Arjuna came to his senses, the sincere person, when one comes to knowledge, to that knowledge, definitely he will act properly. So therefore ultimately Arjuna fought. As fighting. You fight not for yourself, but for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So in this way, anything that is used for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord is called the free will is used properly. For the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So this is the standard of how to use the free will properly. So in connection to life comes from life, I felt that, personally I felt that these are the elements that support the doctrine, life comes from life, by making these arguments from some of these angles. There might be other areas also. So these are some of the thoughts that I've been contemplating. So I'll stop here. So any comments, any questions? Well, you are saying that these people who commit these mistakes, they might be caught conscious before?
Yeah, if they commit suicide and before they're in religion, or something like this, and they come to a stage in life where they realize that they don't know what to do anymore and they commit suicide, I just wonder what happens
to them. No, that's still, we should regard it that they are deeply in ignorance. So only when one is completely covered up by the mode of ignorance, tamaguna, because you have this satta, raja, tama, which is the three gunas, so this the person who does such things will be completely covered up by the many, many layers of tamaguna. Unless one has that, it is not possible to do such things. So we will not say that they were God conscious. So in other words, when one is deeply covered up by the many, many layers of ignorance, so this comes by the results of many, many sinful activities that the person is either knowingly or unknowingly performed, not only in this lifetime, but in many lifetimes before. And then he or she is falsely, thinking that something what he's doing is right, but on a false platform. So in this way, these unless these layers of covering are cleansed by the process of this washing, we have to wash it with many times with the proper process, that unless one does not get the facility, then he gets more entangled. In other words, as individual doing that, thinking that they are doing something according to their mind, something is done good. They thought like that, but there will be darkest reason of hellish existence for many, many years. Can't even say, yeah.
Only I think, for the comment on what the lady or what the lady about, there are different stages of God consciousness also. And I think people like you and those who have given everything to Krishna, they are so strong that they cannot even dream and imagine of coming to suicide because they are not afraid of anything. They're giving everything what they have to God, and they are in the hands of God, and they are always guided in the right direction. I do not know, I never renounce the word, I am not a sannyasi, but I believe sannyasis have nothing to worry on this earth and nothing to be afraid of. They will keep on fighting until the last breath. This is how I think. What is your opinion?
Well, whatever it may be, ultimately we have to learn how to depend on the mercy of the Lord under all circumstances. So this material world is definitely a place of danger. Every step is a danger. So one thing that we can learn from such incidents is that that this world is always a place of danger for all of us. You cannot say, oh, it's going to be better. Always you have to realize that every step is a danger. So blaming this or that is not necessarily the solution. But we have to learn that this place is a place of danger, this world. So every minute, every second that we have, that second we have to utilize in the service of the Lord, in God consciousness. It's like a moment of God consciousness is... then if one can have that knowledge, then it's worth it. But otherwise, this world, we cannot count anything on this. Because this body will be finished any moment. Nobody knows that any moment something will happen. So knowing that, the devotees of the Lord, So they are fully dependent on the mercy of the Lord, and so if we can develop that at least that understanding, then one will be able to see things properly. In the case of Parikshit Maharaj, but he had 7 days time. But for us, and we don't even know it's even in any moment, there may be a heart attack. Sometimes people die. But I heard that somebody is shooting in that even in this country, just like I saw in the newspaper yesterday, there was a bomb explosion in Kashmir. This is another suicide, right? Suicide bomb, suicide car, something like in the car, plantation of bomb.
Yeah. It was driven into the parliament, from near the parliament. But what I wish to know, for example, in Washington and New York, about 6,000 people have died, and many of them were Krishna conscious or God conscious people. And they did not like to, or they were not prepared for what happened in a second. What will happen to their souls?
Well, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever state of mind at the time of separation of this body and the soul, so that extent you'll have that in the next life. So it is possible that some of the people showing the danger, the imminent danger that's right there, especially people who are on the upper stories. I think those are the ones probably who are all died, right? Because on the lower floors, I think people might have some time to go away, because that time is about half an hour, about 30 to 40 minutes, and that before it crumpled down, right?
Yeah.
So I imagine that those who are at the lower floors, I think they might have time to run away, to go out. I think those on the top floor, I think they just didn't have the time to. So therefore they
So many of them who died, that must be in the upper floors.
There were 300, more than 300 firefighters.
Oh, they also died.
The building to save the other people.
Oh.
And they also died.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Because there were some about 30, 40 minutes time gap. In the time they went inside.
Yeah.
Oh. So, this is if they were thinking about the Lord, then some of them might, you know, get a better birth in the next life. They become devotees of the Lord. And so, but it is hard to say. It's very unfortunate. But at least we can learn that, you know, this material world is really a place of danger. We never thought that something will happen like that. Especially I have seen the towers, because I have never been inside. But in New York, going to New York, see all the time as landmarks. But now, when you go to New York, you know, that those landmarks would not be there.
I have always a question in my heart. If this world is full of dangers,
yes,
worries, I've never seen a 100% fully satisfied person on this earth.
Because nobody will be satisfied.
So why? God has created us. Is He playing with us? Is He enjoying this dissatisfaction in human beings?
So that's the same question that I was, people say that why, if God is all merciful, why He created all these troubles? So that's what my answer to that is that in the school of bhakti, those questions don't come. In other words, whatever the Lord has done is because of our own desire, because of our own, just like a child. You know, a child, you say a child wants to play with the fire. A little child. But, you know, that as soon as he plays with the fire, then, you know, his hand is burned. Then he don't do it again. So similarly, the Lord is saying, don't go there to this material world. But we said, no, we disobeyed. We didn't follow what the Lord said. So we came to this world. Then by experiencing these difficulties, then you come to your senses. Yes, no, this is not a proper place to stay. So then you make plans. Then by knowing that, then you become devotee of Krishna. Then you are free once and for all. Then never be again to suffer again. So this is just because of our own desire, we came here and we experienced all these ups and downs, all these difficulties.
Human mother or father saves her or his child before the child burns his or her hand in the fire.
Yeah.
Why God does not do the same thing with us?
No, the Lord is also doing the same thing. He is always warning, don't do this, don't do that. And then we are obstinate. So, but those who are a little more devoted to the Lord, then He gives the, you know, a little bit, at least further intelligence, then they are the one who do not get, in spite of the dangers, then they are still there in order to render devotional service. In other words, what I'm saying is that we should not blame the Lord, but rather we should realize that this is because of our own actions in the thought, not necessarily maybe in this lifetime, but also in the previous lifetime, that we did something, we did not obey the Lord's directions. So therefore we are getting this experience or this result of our own doing. So
So, but in coming to that, then if you are a devotee of the Lord, as you are practicing bhakti yoga, then generally one will not ask those questions that why the Lord is giving trouble. But rather, such a person will begin to realize that because I have done some gross mistakes, not necessarily in this lifetime, but many, many lifetimes before, so the Lord is giving me this experience so that I can correct myself, and so that from now on, or even from the next life, so that I will not be subjected to such dangers again. So in this way, an individual who realizes that, then begin to appreciate about this. It's like in the morning we are reading this Daksha's sacrifice. So in the Daksha's sacrifice, when because he was insulting Lord Shiva, so Lord Shiva got very angry with Daksha. So in fact, Daksha's head was even chopped off, removed, and then later on was connected with the head of a goat. So he had his head was the head of a goat, but the body is the human body. And so then when Daksha got to his senses, he said, "Yes, my dear Lord Shiva, you are very merciful." He did not, this is when he came to his senses, that this was because of my pride, because of my mistake, then I insulted you, and now you are so merciful that you have this type of punishment that you are giving me is actually for my own purification. And so he actually appreciated Lord Shiva and praised and make prayer. So that is some kind of example that when one has learned this art of bhakti or devotional science, then one does not blame. One does not blame anybody else. Rather, he appreciates that this is only for my own benefit, for correcting my mistake, so that I do not any longer commit the mistakes. So in this way, one begins to appreciate. But this is a bit high philosophical understanding. But then normally, if one is not thinking very seriously, one will take it the other way around. In other words, that's what people say, why bad things happen to good people. It's a similar conception. But when one is trained in the school of bhakti, that such negative thoughts do not come. So this is something very extraordinary. So in other words, whether one is in trouble or not trouble, everyone must become a devotee of Lord Krishna. So that is the ultimate solution to all the problems of this material world. So therefore, eventually the conclusion will be, everyone must become a servant of Lord Krishna. That is the conclusion. So we end here. And Jai Guru Marasla Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande.